Hi there, this week on Bliss the Podcast, our sponsor is Sarah Drury Local Looks, a company I loved so much I married the president. So Sarah Drury of Sarah Drury Local Looks is my wife, and she is sponsoring this episode of Bliss to the Podcast, which is extremely appropriate because Sarah is following her bliss, and her bliss is helping women be the best version of themselves, be confident, to kind of show up in public radiating a glow of beauty and confidence. And so she started that process by helping women learn how to do makeup, because there's so many women out there who maybe aren't confident putting on makeup or don't know how to do it quickly or effectively or how to do multiple looks. And so she thought, I'm good at this, I can do this, give me the ball, I'm gonna run with it. And so she started teaching women how to do their makeup, and in the process she learned, oh man, there's so much more to this. This is really a confidence issue. I want to help women be confident and see how incredible they are. And so she has devoted her life to helping women do that. So if you are interested in availing yourself of her skills and her talents, you can go to her website, www.sarahdrurylocallooks, and see what's going on there. Or you can track her down on Facebook or Instagram or Twitter and see what she's all about. She does all kinds of Snapchat and Instagram story tutorials on how to do your makeup. She's constantly posting tips and tricks. And then a couple of times a year, she releases a course that you can purchase that will teach you every conceivable thing you would ever want to know about putting your makeup on and wearing it confidently. And so we're super glad to have Sarah Drury Local Looks as our sponsor, and we encourage you to check it out.
Well, I always tell my students, follow your bliss.
Hello, my babies, and welcome to Bliss to the Podcast. A few things for you to take note of as we get started. First of all, this is the first episode of 2018, so welcome to the new year. Hope your holidays were great and meaningful, and you got everything you wanted and what you wanted included, new realizations as to your worth and value in this world. Second of all, this is our first episode with new recording gear, so hopefully the sound quality is much better than maybe you've been used to. We're really excited to have this gear. Let us know what you think. And third, you might have noticed we changed the intro music. The music we were using was by a band called Jailborn Betty, and it was music that I used for a video series called Lex Rocks that I used to do. And so I just used it for the podcast too, and I was never quite happy with it. It didn't quite capture the feeling I was going to. And so this new music you're listening to, you may think, this sounds a little bit like elevator music. And yeah, it does. And I like the way it feels. And so think of yourself as being on an elevator right now. You're standing on an elevator headed towards your bliss. And it's different from a normal elevator because this time you're not standing there smelling the stinking, pungent, putrid smell of someone else's fart on this elevator. Often when you're standing on an elevator, you smell the disgusting expulsion of the person next to you, but they don't acknowledge it. They just keep looking forward at the unopening doors, and you have to sit there and writhe and suffer in their stinky, stinky fart. So this is not that kind of elevator. Like I said, this is an elevator to your bliss, and so enjoy the ride, and when the doors open, you will be in a heaven of your own making. So look forward to that. We're starting a brand new series this week, and that series, it's something that someone recommended I do. So we talk a lot about how the pathway to bliss is laid out for us in Joseph Campbell's monomyth. And so because I am so immersed in the monomyth, I kind of assume people know what that means, and a lot of people don't. So the monomyth is basically a story structure, that Joseph Campbell discovered that existed within all the religious stories and mythologies of the world. And it's a story structure that you see repeating in Hollywood blockbusters and novels and all of the stories we tell. It's kind of ingrained in our structure and who we are. And when somebody tells a good story, it kind of resonates with this structure. And so this structure also serves as a map for us to discover our bliss. And so what we're going to do is we're going to spend the next 6 weeks, we're going to take different points in the story structure, and I'm going to give you concrete examples of how they have helped people find their bliss. Now, it should be pointed out, the monomyth has 14 different points in it. We are not going to do all 14 points. We're going to do what I feel are the 6 most relevant points, the points that most often occur in someone's search for meaning and bliss. And in a couple of instances, we're going to combine some points to make one super mega giant point. And so if you're a Joseph Campbell head and you're like, oh, 6 seems kind of, I don't know, I get it. You're right. So we're not going to do all 14. We're just going to do 6. But excited about that. Excited for you to be a part of it. We have some great guests. They're going to help us illustrate these different points on the monomyth. And the first guest, incredibly handsome, really smart, really creative, really talented. I'm going to be interviewing myself. I'm going to be talking to myself and about my discovery of bliss. And so the first step in the monomyth is the call to adventure. And so I'm going to be talking today about my call to adventure and how it started me on the pathway to my own bliss. And it's not going to be just be me. I'm going to have another guest with us here today, specifically my wife, Sarah Drury, who was very involved and very very important to me achieving my bliss. And so she'll pop in later after I've talked for a little bit. But anyway, that's what we're doing for this week and the next 6 weeks. And we're really super excited about it. We're glad you're here with us. So let's get started. So what is the call to adventure? At the beginning of every story, the hero exists in a world of status quo. Life is for him as it has always been. And then he encounters a problem that must be overcome. And you see this pattern in a lot of familiar stories. In Star Wars, Luke discovers R2-D2, who has a hologram message in him from Princess Leia.
Help me, Obi-Wan Kenobi. You're my only hope.
And he realizes from that there's something he has to take care of. Harry Potter gets an invitation from a bunch of owls. They come and they drop this invitation in his lap, and he realizes, oh, the world is bigger than I thought it was. Something needs to be done to overcome this mediocre, miserable world I live in. In Batman, Bruce Wayne's parents are killed in front of him, and he sits over their bodies in a dark alley, trying to make sense of the world and realizing if he's going to get any sense from the world, he's going to have to put on a costume and beat that sense out of the world. And so that happens to all of us at some point in our life. We are presented with a problem that needs to be solved. And this is our call to adventure. You may be presented with a lot of problems in your life, obviously, that need to be solved, but there's going to be one, a specific one, a special one, that you're going to make it your mission to solve. You're going to devote your life to it. And it's recognizable in some ways outside of these stories I talked about. In real life, it's recognizable because usually solving it is enjoyable. It gives you life. It brings you joy to address this problem. And so that's one way to recognize the call to adventure. You're called to a problem and you are enthusiastic about solving it. Call to adventure doesn't have to just happen once, and it doesn't have to happen quickly. For me personally, in my journey towards bliss, my call to adventure first occurred in 2011/2012, and then carried on for 3 years after that. In 2012, my wife had our son, Jack Henry, and he was our first kid. So I was it actually wasn't 2011, it was 2012 is when she got pregnant. And so I spent that time as an expectant father doing the thing that all expectant fathers do, is sit and wonder, what am I going to tell my son about the world, about love and about women and about work and those types of things, the things that make up life.
And at the time, I worked at a church. So one of the things I wondered what I was going to tell him about was God and religion. And I had grown up in a really Christian home with really super loving parents. But the image I was given of God by the church and by religion wasn't one that I particularly liked. As a matter of fact, I found myself kind of not really liking God. And so I would think about, well, what am I going to tell my son about God? Am I going to tell him that there's an entire half of a book that details what a vengeful, jealous, angry person he was, but we have to disregard that part of the book because it is negated by the second half of the book? Was I going to tell him that God created us damaged and incomplete and then commanded us to figure it out and make ourselves complete and make the world better? None of those things really were what I wanted. They weren't the God I wanted to present my son with. And so I would lay in bed at night and think about it. And I thought about it so much, and it became very stressful to me. And eventually it expressed itself physically. I started itching. My lower back started itching really badly, so I would scratch it as I lay in bed at night wrestling with these questions. And finally my wife Sarah noticed it, and she said to me, what's going on? She saw me getting in and out of a shower, or noticed me scratching all the time, and asked about it. And I told her what was going on. I scratch because I'm stressed, and I'm stressed because I can't figure out how to explain the God I have spent 30 plus years worshiping to my son. And she said, well, you're going to go to a therapist. And so I did. She made me go to a therapist. And at first I resisted it, because that's what happens. We heroes often refuse the call. And when I say hero, I'm not calling myself a hero at this point. I'm just referring to myself as the protagonist of the story, if you will. So I kind of refused the call at first. I didn't want to go to therapy, but she made me. And so we went and saw this man named Dr. Jett here in Lexington, Kentucky, who I have a lot of love and respect for. And he pointed out to me that I had never been through what Carl Jung would have called the individuation process, where I kind of take authority over my own life. See, I had lived my life trying to make authority figures happy, be it my parents or the church or bosses or society. And there was a way I thought I was supposed to live to fit in and to make those people happy. And so that was the way I lived. And I had never really taken control of myself away from those figures. And not even that, I don't want to paint the picture that those figures and those authorities are always malicious or wrong, but following someone else's plan for your life is always wrong. It may not be malicious, it may not be evil, but it is not the plan that you're supposed to follow. You're supposed to determine that for yourself. And I had never done that process. So he gave me permission to kind of take control of my life and to pick up all the things I had been handed by authority figures and ask myself, do I believe this? And if I did, put it in the keep pile. If I didn't, put it in the throwaway pile. And so unfortunately for some people, Christianity ended up in the throwaway pile. And so I kind of turned away from it. And that was my first call to adventure. That was the first step I took, leading me on the pathway to my bliss. And my wife, Sarah, was a huge part of that.
So I thought it would be a good idea for you to go to therapy because you had a couple of different tics that were developing over time. For example, I don't know if you want it said, but there was itching. And I don't know, I can't remember them all, but there were a couple of different things that were showing up, and they were obvious. It was obvious that there was some underlying issue that was causing all of these things to sort of manifest. So it was clearly, when it was more than one thing, it was clearly not just a physical issue, but to me that was evidence of an underlying emotional issue.
Joseph Campbell writes in his seminal work on the monomyth, The Hero with a Thousand Faces, as Freud has shown, blunders are not the merest chance. They are the result of suppressed desires and conflicts. They are ripples on the surface of life produced by unsuspected springs. And these may be very deep as the soul itself. The blunder may amount to the opening of a destiny. what's Joseph Campbell saying here? He's saying there are no mistakes. And this is meaningful in my second call to adventure. As I stated earlier, I was working at a church and I was doing video production work at this church. And after 8 years, they decided to let me go. Now, if you were to ask me why they let me go, I would tell you that I was no longer good at the job they were asking me to do. If you were to ask my therapist, Dr. Jett, that I mentioned earlier, he thinks they let me go because of my doubts and the questions I was asking. Now, I am hesitant to say this is the fact. I think it casts me a little too heroically. And plus, I think it is no less meaningful that they let me go because I was no longer good at the job I was doing. Because as Joseph Campbell said, these mistakes and these blunders we make often come from a deeper place. And so I think, without a doubt, I was no longer happy working at the church, partly because I was going through a lot of doubts, but partly because I was realizing it wasn't the place for me. I wasn't the person I was when I started there 8 years ago, and it was time for me to move on to something different. Unfortunately, I was refusing that particular call at the time. We know that people often refuse calls to adventure because they are scared or because they are attached to their life as it is and they don't want it to change. And so that fear and that attachment often causes people to get very comfortable in the status quo. And so that's what I was. And so my soul didn't like that, so it started causing me to make mistakes that ultimately cost me my job, I think. And so the church asked me to resign, so I resigned. And my wife once again stepped in as my supernatural aide and said to me, you need to go out and start your own thing. See, my first inclination upon losing my job was to go out and find something where I could get a salary and benefits and be provided for and be taken care of and be led. And she knew that wasn't going to be right for me, that I wasn't going to be happy, that I had issues with authority, that I wanted to be the captain of my own ship. So she pushed me and I said, nope, not going to do it. So I went and I had an interview for a job, and that went spectacularly badly. The guy who interviewed me just kind of jerked me around and didn't get back with me for weeks, and so it annoyed me so much I went to him and I told him, I said, man, you can't do that when someone's looking for a job. You can't just forget about them and not care. And obviously he didn't take that well, so that was kind of a little bit of a tense moment. But I went back home and I told Sarah, I said, you're right, so what do I do next? And she said, well, you figure out some people you would want to work with if you worked for yourself. And you approach them, and if they're into the idea of working with you, then you know you're supposed to do that. So I did. I reached out to a couple of people. They were into it, so I started my own video production company. And to be clear, video production is not my bliss, but it was the first stepping stone for me to step on to cross the raging river of my life at the time to eventually get to the place where I could practice my bliss. And if you're wondering what my bliss actually is, you're listening to it. Not podcasting, but talking about bliss, talking about the monomyth, helping people apply it to their life in a way that is helpful to them. Creating content around these ideas that there is a joy that lives inside of us that we were meant for. And when we practice that joy, it burns out all other pain. And so that is my bliss, is kind of preaching that message. I can't seem to get away from evangelizing or proselytizing or preaching or whatever it was. I didn't preach at my old job at the church in a conventional sense, but I did help communicate values, and I do that now with a different set of values, one that doesn't seek to hold up the institution of the church, but one that instead seeks to hold up the individual and the value of the individual. And so I got called to that mission twice. Once by being told where your head's at right now isn't right, and it is not where you're supposed to be. And the second time by a message that what I was doing with my life wasn't right, what I was supposed to be. And my wife was the instigator of both of those messages. And it was very stressful for her to see me lose a job, and very stressful for my family. And so I value her and her place and all of that.
So after you'd been going to therapy for a while and started actually taking ownership in some of your feelings and just in general, like, your life, and started to actually create a life that you wanted to be living, I feel like the change in you is night and day. And some of that is just being a little bit more aggressive at times and not in like a physical way or like in a negative way, although sometimes it is obnoxious, but
I haven't started hitting you.
No, God, no, of course not. But I feel like for a while you were very like docile. I don't know if that's the right word, but then after you went to therapy for a while, you just started, maybe it's just expressing your emotions and expressing what you wanted and your opinion and how you wanted things to go, which obviously is how anyone would want to be, but I think for a long time you didn't do those things. So now that you do, I feel like it lets you be yourself more, and you just seem happier overall.
So what did you think when I said to you after I lost my job that I was just going to go apply for a job somewhere to get salary and benefits?
Well, obviously you losing your job was kind of the actual catalyst to you figuring out who you want to be and all that. But directly after, I think you saying, oh, I think I'll just get a job, to me was showing signs of just more fear, or just going back to the same thing that you had been doing that clearly was not resulting in what you wanted it to result in. So I don't know, it's just like if you keep doing the same thing over and over, you keep getting the same results. So to me, it was very obvious that you needed to do something different, and you have so many gifts and talents, I just think it is silly not to be using them and kind of creating something from scratch that also you can benefit more from financially and other ways. But when you're your own boss, you get to set the ceiling, especially financially.
So there you go. My call to adventure expressed itself in two ways. The first being a realization that I had to take authority over my life.
I'll tell you what. I may my life up flatter than hammered, but I stand here before you today beholden to no human.
The second being that I was better off working for myself and not trying to become a cog in somebody else's machine, but instead trying to advance the progress of my own machine. And as you heard, my wife Sarah was no small part of that decision. And if there's anybody who's bore the brunt of those decisions, it's her, because life as an entrepreneur, life kind of captaining your own ship, is rewarding, and I'm happier even on the sorriest day than I ever was. But it's not always easy, because the paychecks aren't as regular as they used to be, but when you get them, they're more meaningful. And I have surrounded myself with people to kind of help give me guidance, I guess, when it comes to living that life. I have a friend named Robbie Cassenz, and I don't think I've ever said this to him, but one of the reasons I really like Robbie is he decided a while back he just wanted to play music, kind of like Josh Nolan, the guest in our first podcast. But Robbie decided he just wanted to be a musician. He didn't want to work any other jobs, and so he has had to adjust his lifestyle in such a way that he can weather the downtimes. And so Robbie gets by on what he makes from music, and so because of that, he has to say no to some things and kind of pare his life down to just what he wants and needs to survive. And so that's an inspiration to me. Having a 5-year-old, as I mentioned earlier, He's expensive. He's a little bit of a materialist. He likes toys. He likes things. And so it's hard sometimes, but it's worth it. And I want him to remember his father as someone who did his own thing and believed in the efficacy and worthiness of the individual. So anyway, this was me talking about The Call to Adventure. I hope it was helpful to you. I hope it's made you take a step back and look at your own life to try and maybe recognize what your call to adventure was, or keep your eyes open for the coming call to adventure. And this is just the first step in the monomyth. There's more to come. And like I said, we're just going to do 6 of the steps in this series. But after the call to adventure, there's the refusal of the call that happens sometimes. And I talked about that in this episode a little bit. You get the call from the universe to step up. It's your time at bat, and you're a little scared to do it, maybe because you're scared of what a new life might look like, or maybe you're really attached to your old life, or maybe you just don't feel like you have all the tools necessary. So the refusal of the call is something that occasionally happens, and you were pulled out of that by supernatural aid. And so I talked about that a little bit in this episode too. Sarah represents my supernatural aid in a lot of ways. And so the next 2 episodes, refusal of the call and supernatural aid, that's what's coming. So thank you guys for listening. Hope you enjoyed it, and we'll see you next week.
Bliss the Podcast is a production of Breadbox Media. We make no claim as to ownership of the music or additional clips used in this podcast. See you next week.